Welcome to As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. Today we welcome my friend Jeremy Hunt to the podcast. Jeremy has been on the show three other times. Travis interviewed him, he conducted Travis's exit interview, and then I got to interview Jeremy and Caden back in 2020 when the pandemic was fresh. Jeremy is from the noise art rock band Qohelith, and Jeremy has an experimental noise loop project called Ain't Pancakes. You hear Jeremy's music every week as he composed the As the Story Grows intro theme. Jeremy talks about how his desire to teach led him to seminary, the themes on Qohelith's latest record, Warmonger, the creative process for his various outfits, creating toys with his daughters, and more. It's always delightful to catch up with Jeremy, and I appreciate people who take creative leaps outside the normal boxes that we usually put music in. So whether you're a longtime fan or unfamiliar with Jeremy and his work, I hope you guys enjoy this week's chat. You got your doctorate in theology. Let's start here. You might have talked about this with Travis when you were on the very first time, but I do not remember that conversation.
Sure.
So you don't seem like the type of person who's going to go into the pastorate. So why this doctorate in theology?
I guess there are a couple different layers to it. One is So I've worked professionally in social media now for, 13 years. I think this is now my 13th year working in social media. And, you know, and I've worked for different organizations, some nonprofits. I've worked in higher ed. I am working in higher ed right now. And I actually really like the rhythm and the pace of at least what I do in higher ed. I mean, there's a cyclical nature to the years. And you know what you're focused on, but basically, let's see, 2014-ish, 2013, somewhere in there, the company or the organization I was working for a healthcare system, just actually, you know, kind of talking about with your wife and her job, the level of stress doing social media for a healthcare system was just off the charts. I was the only person that they had who worked on it full time. And it was just one of these things where I was like, I just don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life. I don't know if this is a field I want to be in. I'm grateful that, you know, it's provided for my family. I'm grateful that it's been a job and work that I've been able to do. But April, my wife and I basically just started talking, and she was like, you know, I could really see you teaching. And when she said that, it was like a light bulb went off in my head, and I was like, yeah, I probably could too. You know, and all things considered, you know, I've changed organizations a number of times in my professional career. The work has remained steady, but the idea of teaching long-term really appealed to me. And also, you know, just who knows what life is going to hold for us by the time we all reach our 60s and 70s.
Right.
I'm not anticipating that I'll really ever be able to fully retire, just because I it's kind of hard to see financially for all of us. I feel like, you know, this generation and younger, but teaching feels like something that would be sustainable. So that's really what led to it, was like, okay, if I'm going to teach, what would I want to teach? What would I actually want to spend my time diving into? And so that's what ultimately led me to Fuller Seminary out in Pasadena, California. Was they have, at the time, they were one of the only schools in the country, you know, postgraduate, that had a degree program that focuses on theology and culture, which is what my master's is in. And then also my went on for my PhD at the school as well. And so really, the, you know, the long and the short of it is I don't know what the future holds, but I wanted to make sure that I was focusing on something that I would be passionate about essentially for the rest of my life. And, you know, this is a, it's an area that I've been really curious about and have been involved in various ways over the years, whether it's through freelance writing, through the music that, you know, I create myself and with the band. It's just something that has always captured my imagination is the interplay between what is it that we believe. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like Christian or faith specific in that manner. I mean, just, you know, essentially what intrinsically makes us humans, are where we center our values, where we find our purpose, all these different things. I feel like storytelling and culture, whether it's through film, TV, poetry, dance, you know, painting, whatever, all the arts, I feel like in some form or fashion can find an anchor point in that, even if it's not explicit. Like, and in fact, I think the stuff that's not really explicit, I think the stuff that tends to focus on just trying to express ourselves as humans and make sense of the experiences that we go through, make sense of our questions, of our doubts. To me, those are the things that I find most deeply theological and profound. And so that's essentially, you know, where I want to spend my time. And so, yes, I have no intention whatsoever of ever being a pastor. I can't imagine a church that would ever want to have me. I feel like I'll piss off too many people and I'd be deemed a heretic as soon as, you know, I got in. But, you know, teaching feels like a place where it's okay to, you know, wrestle with those things and say, hey, how can we unpack this? What might we have not considered?
It's interesting. I just read Brian McLaren's Faith After Doubt, and he talks about, there's a chapter in there about seminary and how, like, people go to seminary and then it fucks up their theology. And then they want to go preach, but the churches and the people who pay for pastors don't want all the knowledge you have. And so seminary is just creating teachers.
No, that's probably fair. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, my experience at Fuller was largely a positive one, but I had, and I say this as a positive thing, I had classes where I came out of them and I was like, how in the hell did I not know about this growing up in the church? Like, how were these things not talked about, or what, you know? And that's not a knock, you know, a lot of the churches I grew up in were like small. And again, like, you know, growing up in South Carolina, mostly, one of them was in Greenville, but a few of them were, you know, more rural. And so you're probably dealing with folks that as they were coming up and, you know, either getting their training or possibly not even having a ton of training, but just feeling like, you know, I understand the language of, you know, feeling the call to be a pastor, that kind of thing. I'm assuming probably starting out with good intentions. And so, but you know, it's, there's a lot out there that I don't think gets fully explored. Either through lack of access or lack of opportunity, or on the other side of it, a lack of curiosity, maybe, of saying like, what, why do we not wrestle with these things more? And certainly that was my experience growing up, was when I got to the point where I started questioning things like, hey, what, you know, why are the women in this church only allowed to, you know, teach music and Sunday school, but none of them are ever up, you know, preaching on Sunday? Well, you know, and I just, and then each step of the way, it was, you know, more questions like that. Like, why do we, you know, shun gays and lesbians? Why do we not, you know, all these different things? Why are these things forbidden and these things are not? And a lot of it just was, I ended up essentially getting the message over the years, like, you know, stop asking questions. And so I was like, all right, cool. Well, I'll see you later. This is not satisfactory. I'm going to keep looking elsewhere.
So,
Yeah.
Good times.
So yeah, seminary, here I come.
Let's talk about music. Let's talk about Qohelet to start. You guys released Warmonger in 2021. As a band that doesn't tour, you guys can kind of release music whenever.
Yeah.
Talk about the process of this record, a lot of collaboration. I'm curious about how you came up with the artist you worked with on this project and kind of themes and inspiration.
Yeah, so we're not necessarily a band that dives into Coheed and Cambria levels of world building, but there are some themes and some ideas that have started to emerge over the, or that started to emerge, I guess, with our first two albums. And in reality, the idea for the ideas for Warmonger were actually taking root pretty soon after our first album, God is the Warmest Place to Hide. Just in part because that album really focused on, unsurprisingly, given what we've already talked about, really focused on, you know, abuses that tend to be religion and faith-based. A lot of the themes of that album were literally calling out things that I had seen and experienced in a lot of Christian circles, and trying to both reckon with them and wrestle with, you know, is there a way to hang on to any semblance of faith in the face of these things? What has to be, what can be essentially, I guess, held on to, and what has to be rejected, or what needs to be, you know, questioned. And so the thought was, okay, Warmonger will follow up on that on a broader level of wrestling with themes of violence in general, and specifically, you know, the sort of things that we deal with, you know, here in America, here in the States. But then, as I was starting to think about those ideas, Mike was sending me a bunch of musical ideas, and I started messing with some of those and creating some of my own. I'm trying to remember exactly, but basically the bones of our second album, Black Kite Broadcast, really started coming together really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was just the sort of thing where I was like, oh, this is, you know, let's go with, you know, the energy that we're feeling on this, and let's make this happen. And then we can return to Warmonger. And so in a lot of ways, thematically, if someone were to want to try to like get into the story that we're telling, because Black Kite Broadcast obviously jumps forward into the future at a point where humanity got to the point that we were doing so much damage basically to ourselves and to the rest of the world that nature decided to rise up and basically overthrow us. And so that's the backstory of what you're hearing in Black Kite Broadcast. So basically I thought, okay, if God is the Warmest Place to Hide sort of introduces this idea of like, what can we rely on as humans? What is worth tearing down and deconstructing, and what is worth holding on to? Warmonger then almost becomes the inciting point for Black Kite Broadcast. Mm-hmm. This is all the shit basically that led to, you know, creation, nature saying, all right, humanity's had enough. enough time. So that's really where the basic themes came from. And at that point, you know, the songs and some of the lyrics started taking on basically sort of a skeletal form of like, you know, we need to talk about, you know, gun violence and literal sort of, you know, violence in general, but then other themes of emotional violence, relational violence. And that was really where with the collaborators, and I want to say that I don't know that we've done it perfectly, but as soon as we sort of got into a creative rhythm as a band early on, one of the things that I always wanted to try to practice, and I mean we're nobody special. There are other bands that are doing this too, I think, but I really wanted to try to have a mindset and a posture of how can we hold the door open for others? How can we, you know, take the little bits of things that we know in terms of, you know, literally just being a garage band that sends files back and forth since we live in different places. How can we take what we are learning and help others with that. And so part of what we wanted to do with Warmonger was, you know, literally invite some folks into the space with us to create, and specifically to make sure that we had, you know, varying perspectives on this, and that it wasn't just, you know, three white dudes, you know, raging about things. So the artists that we invited in were friends of mine who, you know, come from different communities and different backgrounds. I mean, a lot of stuff that we do share in common, because we've been, you know, friends, you know, for varying periods of time, depending on when I met each of them. But yeah, that was the idea behind bringing in the collaborators with us, was saying, here's what we're doing. We've written some music. At that point, when I reached out to them, I'm trying to remember, I think we had maybe some instrumental, some rough demos sketched out. But I really wanted them to have some say in, you know, what they were helping us create. So I think I'm trying to remember if we approached anyone and said, hey, we really, you know, I really think you ought to work with this particular track. I think if I remember correctly, with each of them, there was like a bank of maybe four or five tracks. And I just sent them and said, hey, you know, take a listen as you have time. Let me know what resonates with you, and then we'll work with you, whether you want to sing, whether you want to do more of a spoken word thing. And then our buddy John Petkow, who we've collaborated with before on other stuff, he added some really cool noise effects to one of the final tracks. So yeah, three vocalists, and then John as an instrumentalist joined us. So just really, I'm really proud of how those tracks in particular turned out. I'm proud of the album as a whole, but the other piece of that was I really, really wanted to honor their perspectives and their voices. And I think based on their feedback, you know, I think we were able to pull that off. So I'm really gratified that was able to happen the way it did.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys also at the same time released Contaminator, a companion piece. Talk to me about that.
That came about sometime after, I don't know, Warmonger definitely at this point is the project that took us the longest to complete. Just, I think the scope of it, you know, life stuff going on, just the three of us, you know, Mike and Caden and I, just all the things we're juggling at all times. But let's see, the stuff for Contaminator actually came about when we had moved back to North Carolina, and we were actually living with Caden and his family for a period of time, partly because of the lockdown, but also just like, hey, we need a place to stay until homes basically open back up again and we can actually, you know, look around for a place to live. And they had an old piano in their house. I think they still do. And I just sat down at it a few times over the course of a few days and literally just improvised some stuff and, you know, didn't know what to do with it, started thinking about it. And I don't know, man, I'm trying to remember how the idea hit, but basically I was like, what if it would be really wild if any of this lined up? And I started taking some of those tracks and, you know, editing them, manipulating them, chopping them up a bit. But then I just was like, wait a minute, some of this might actually work with some of these Warmonger pieces. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea behind it, was, you know, here's an EP of instrumental stuff that is a companion piece. But what we wanted to really hint at, and we did it primarily through the
titles,
and then the cereal box. We dropped a ton of hints on the Warmonger cereal box that we created. Was, hey, you could actually sync these up and play these, mm-hmm. you know, certain tracks together. Not the whole EP with the LP, but six certain tracks on the LP on the record would sync up. So I love it. You know, certainly, again, that's nothing, you know, necessarily brand new, but there are bands that have done that before that I love layers to the art. And so that's something that, again, is important, I think, for everything that we do is, you know, what are the different levels here that, you know, if you purely just want to engage with it on one surface level, awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, hopefully there's something there that catches your ear. But if you are someone that likes to unpack things the way that we do, hopefully we've, you know, put enough in there that, like this that you could experience it that way as well. So
yeah, you mentioned the Cereal Box. You're one of those bands I like because you're always doing either weird merch or just like, here's a VHS tape of some weird shit. So how'd the idea for a Cereal Box for Warmongers come about?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know. I mean, I'm obsessed with pop culture and the ways in which it shaped me and the ways in which it continues, I think, to shape all of us, again, kind of going back to what we were talking about with Seminary and stuff. But I love using, you know, iconography and those sorts of media in subversive ways. And so I honestly feel like part of it was like, we're doing a really, really heavy album thematically. What are some ways that we can get a little bit more humorous, not to undercut it, but basically drive the satire even further home? So like the lyrics on More Guns on Warmonger, honestly, I was like, when I wrote them, it was actually after yet another school shooting. And I was just so angry. And so what I wrote fairly quickly was probably one of the most, at least for me, probably one of the darker songs I've ever written. But it was basically, I was like, all I know how to do is take sarcasm and satire as far as I can with these lyrics. And so I think the Cereal Box was kind of an extension of that, of like, okay, let's just model this after like an old school Cereal Box. You know, let's again put as many little hints on there as we can, little Easter eggs. And then on the back, you know, I found an old, I don't know, man, maybe from an old Captain Crunch box or something, found an old like game, you know, board game essentially, and, you know, edited it and chopped it up and kind of made our own thing out of it, basically doing like a board game remix, I guess. And so even there, the you know, the game is called Bombs Away, and the whole point of the game is like, how many of these islands and how many of these buildings can you destroy? Which, you know, again, in my mind was like, this is kind of the legacy, at least in part, of the United States, is,
you know, right,
going where we don't need to go, or policing, you know, people groups that we don't need to police. But even in that, I tried to put a hint. I don't know if anybody's picked up on it yet, but and maybe they have and just haven't told me. But even in the game instructions, I tried to put in something that would almost undercut the violence and to suggest, hey, there are, if we can think creatively, there are ways of opting out. Like there, so there's a little, there's a particular rule within the game rules where if you pay attention to it, you're like, oh, I can actually not do this. I can start the game and, you know, participate in the violence, but at a certain point, I can make a decision to actually not finish, and I can.
Yeah.
So even that. So, so yeah, it was just, and then the really cool thing that I loved about what we were able to pull off with the box was that the front art is an actual art piece that Caden and I worked on together. So the original piece is literally like, I forget how big it is, but it's actually a resin pour. So we did multiple layers of laminated the art pieces. So like, you know, Horus, and then like the, sorry, I brought it over because it's been a while since I'm trying to remember what we did. But like the cereal bowl, the cereal pieces, like all of these elements, basically there's at least one or two layers of each. And then Caden poured resin over it. We let it harden. Then we did another to try to make it more tactile.
Yeah.
Give it more of a 3D sort of look. And then we, you know, took photos of that. And actually, I'm remembering this now, Kay, our friend Kay, who's on the, let's see, which tape is hers? Sorry, which track is hers? Dying Nuance, Dying World. So she's a vocalist on that. She's also a ridiculously talented graphic designer. So as we were finalizing this and the piece itself was done, I was trying to think about the best ways to capture the image for the box. And we were just emailing one day, and she's like, send it over to me. She said, I'll take a look. And so she helped us kind of clean that up for, you know, reproduction on the box. So again, just really grateful for, you know, the talents of our friends and
That's dope. I'm curious about the creative process, both on the Aunt Pancake stuff and Quillhellen, because like re-listening to a lot of that stuff this morning in the last few days to prepare, and just like there's so much of it that like sometimes feels effortless. And I know like when you do like noise and loop stuff, like it could just be like, did they even try? But like as someone in that creative space doing like ambient stuff, like it's really hard actually to like figure out what textures and layers. So I'm curious about the creative and writing process. And
well, I mean, so I guess I have two answers. The cop-out answer would be, I really think, you know, Mike, a few years back, you know, not too long after we got started, coined what has become sort of our, almost our guiding principle as a band in Quillhellen. And I think I've internalized it, you know, even more with Aunt Pancakes is, you know, written by accident and played by instinct. So I would not say that we're an improv, that either of these are improv, but we try as much as we can to kind of go with our first instincts and with our guts. Mm-hmm. I think some of that comes from years of playing music in very structured environments and, you know, having a certain amount of training on our instruments, maybe not a ton. Certainly Mike is just, you know, wildly gifted and talented. And, you know, the main stuff that I bring to everything is just, you know, essentially trying to shove myself forward ability wise as I can. But yeah, I think, you know, a lot of what ends up on Quillhellen stuff and a lot of what ends up with Aunt Pancakes is often, it's not necessarily a first take, but once we have ideas down, it's like the first two or three maybe run throughs of those ideas and just trying to keep that energy there. And I think a lot of it is also, you talked about the layers, and you know, what you highlight. I mean, part of it is certainly, Mike's actually finishing up school. He's been in a program, for sound design and sound recording and production. So some of this is just his increasing abilities, particularly with the call stuff. And Pancakes, I do all on my own. But particularly with Quillhellen, you know, he's mixing and mastering. I've done just a little bit. We released a couple of one-off tracks over the past maybe year and a half on some different compilations. And so with some of those, if he hasn't had time, like if he's been in the thick of, you know, work and assignments and we needed to get something turned around quickly, I would do a mix pass or and then send it to him. And then, you know, he would do a master on it. But I think some of that is just, I think some of it's trusting our guts and some of it is also just learning over. I mean, we've been writing music now together for, I guess this will be our seventh year. Like we started writing our first album in 2016. So I think some of it is just, you know, instincts and listening that develops, over the course of doing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think with if there's anything wildly different with Aunt Pancakes. I think the thing that I try to do with Aunt Pancakes is each of the three releases thus far have really come from very different places sonically. I mean, I think they all maintain a through line of sort of like chaos and noise, which is obviously intentional. But like the first one was literally taking loops, 10 to maybe 15 second loops from our TV audio that would glitch and basically saying, okay, is there a way that, and so in a lot of ways, the first two in particular were really more, I went about them from almost a technical challenge standpoint where I was like, okay, I think there's something here, but can I make something, you know, artful or even just listenable out of it. And so like that first one was literally just saying, I've captured all these random clips from the TV. when it's glitched. I've captured, you know, I don't know, maybe like 10 to 15 of them, and on my phone. So there's no stems. It's literally like the audio I have is what I have to work with. Is there a way for me to deconstruct them enough to stretch them out, to chop them up? What can I do with them to make it so it feels essentially like some sort of like weirdo outsider mixtape? And then the second one was more of almost like an audio journal or diary of just stuff that I'd collected over the course of like a year and a half while we were living in California, or maybe even longer than that. We were out there for almost 6 years, so the span may have been longer. But that one was definitely more leaning into, you know, ambient and other stuff of just like how do I weave these pieces together? And then the most recent one that came out last year was probably, I don't want to say the most straightforward, but that one was essentially like I got a bunch of like pocket operators and random little, you know, micro synths and stuff like with beats. And so that's what I was kind of trying to explore. I was like, okay, what do I do to make like just really, really simple beats? And then just how do I think one of those tracks, I ran them through one of my guitar pedals and essentially just, it's me just messing around and exploring. Yeah. What can I create out of this that feels, you know, maybe a little cohesive or just fun to spend time with? And so that's really kind of where those all originated.
Right. It's more like dumping a box of Legos out and figuring what you can build with the Legos as opposed to like songwriting, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, I love that illustration. Yeah. That's a great, analogy for sure. That's good.
Yeah. It's Bandcamp Friday. You sent a message out. You guys have all these little fun little toy packages. That come with special songs for people who pick up the like sticker pack and the toys.
What
was the brainchild behind that? Just like, hey, here's something special for people who support the band in a non-musical way?
Like the downloads or
Yeah,
I think I've always wanted to try to include something. And with the stickers, I mean, you know, I don't know if it's insecurity is not the right word, but or maybe it is. I always want to be bringing something. I always just want to bring more bang for the buck if I can, you know, when it comes right down to it. I know that there is, you know, and you mentioned Bandcamp Friday. It's a perfect example. Like, I love the concept, but it has gotten so noisy now. I mean, and with good reason. I mean, you know, I'm in a couple of different online communities with different musicians and bands, and good Lord, there is so much good stuff being created right now. Your stuff included. I mean, there are just so many thoughtful people who are engaged in music as an art form right now. That I think it's not that I'm like worried, like, oh, this will pale in comparison. I think I just always want to be bringing as much as I can, as much as we can to folks. And so whether that's free stickers and pins or free download codes when somebody buys something from us, or in the case of the sticker pack, like, hey, here's something that you might not have heard quite yet, or you might not have heard it in the way that you thought you might have heard it, that we, you know, we included with that. And then with the newest minifigure pack, it's basically like giving away a little bit, it's basically like a sampler of the releases that we have planned for the next like year and a half. So I don't know. It's still for me, not weirdly, it all still comes back to the music. Like if it were enough to be able to just say, you know, here's the music, dive in and enjoy. And I think for some people it is, you know, that would be one thing, but all these other pieces for me have always been about how do we extend that experience if someone wants to engage on that level. And so I think that's part of it too, is just trying to be as consistent as possible and saying, you know, whatever you pick up from us, if you're going to, again, plunk down your hard-earned cash, we're going to give you as much as we financially feasibly can give.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of our stuff already is free in the digital form. So I think that's the other piece of it too, is like, okay, you know, if you're going to get some sort of physical tangible thing from us, let's again, layer it with as much as we can.
Yeah. You put out a handful of singles last year on various compilations. I don't remember if it was two or three.
Yeah.
What's this year? You have music in the works.
Yeah. So I'm actually really, really excited about this. This all goes back to essentially wrapping up Warmonger, and this is actually the first time I've really talked to anybody about this. We've dropped some hints, but wrapping up Warmonger, and then basically being in, you know, COVID times, led to a lot of just experimentation stuff that I was doing here at home. And essentially, I don't know, after about a year or so, I'm trying to think about when this idea really took root, maybe 2021, beginning of it. It was a couple of different things. New stuff that I'd been creating. Cade and I tried out the Patreon thing for a little bit, where every month I would create an electronic based track, and he would create a new visual piece. And so mm-hmm. we'd release it together. So after, you know, 10 months or so of doing that, and that never took off. I mean, I had a couple of like dear friends who supported, and I'm, you know, so grateful, but we, you know, it never took off the way we hoped.
Patreon is really fucking hard.
Yeah, it is. But coming out of that, we were like, oh, we have this bank of 10 songs or 10 pieces. Maybe we can do something with this. You know, I was creating other stuff. Mike was working on some things. I started going back kind of through the archives, so to speak, of stuff, you know, ideas that we had maybe explored but hadn't done anything with. Essentially, I looked at it, I was like, we potentially have a ton of stuff to release. What are we going to do with it? Do we release everything? And then I returned to, creatively, to Black Kite Broadcasts, where, you know, each of those tracks on that album is basically like a fake band from the future.
Yeah.
I had the idea. I was like, what if we took all of these things and broke them up into different, you know, collections, essentially different buckets of tracks and songs to finish up? And what if we do actual releases for some of these fake bands? And so that's what we're doing.
Nice.
We're doing two are fully done, and then two more are, you know, we're wrapping things up. And so some of this is more, and to bring it full circle with the collaboration, essentially I brought it to Mike and said, you know, what do you think about this? And to Caden, and they both of them basically gave it their blessing. And so some of these are you know, technically maybe more closer to like solo projects, but like, even so, the first one that's coming out is on the 14th of February on Valentine's Day. Euphoriatic Studios is putting out, or Euphoriatic Records is putting out, an EP from Territorial Pissants. So that's the band, one of the early bands on Black Kite Broadcast. A lot of this is stuff that I created by myself, but the sort of, so it's two bookend tracks and then two longer tracks in the middle. And one of those longer tracks, the foundation of it is actually one of Mike's old drum beats, like just a kind of a sketch beat that he did, he recorded. And so I built something on top of that. And so even that, you know, is, you know, very much representative of us, just in a different way, in a different sort of facet. So, yeah, so there's going to be that. There's another one where started out as electronica stuff. And I reached out to a buddy of mine in England who's in a phenomenal band called Wahila. They're more sort of metal, noise rock, but with a lot of improvisation. They actually do a lot of improvisation for some of their stuff. And I just absolutely love them. So Andrew is a member of their band. And I just sent him a few of these tracks. I was like, would you be interested in messing around with any of these? And he took it and layered it with his own approach. And it blew me away. I loved how it turned out. So basically the next one of these spinoffs that will be coming out is him and me for another one of the fake bands.
Nice.
And then the last two are still, they're not done, but a bulk of the work has been done. And so again, like one of them, I reached out to a buddy who does like a lot of really cool lo-fi hip hop and ambient stuff and said, hey, I'd love to have you join me on this. So he's working on some of those tracks. And then the fourth one is actually with Mike right now. Without giving too much away about it, it's like just one long track. And I think if he's able to carve out some time, I think if he can do basically like an improv or close to an improv drum percussion approach to it, I think it might turn out really, really cool. But we'll see. I mean, those two are, of the four, those two are the most in flux right now. But that's the plan, is basically it's going to be a set of tapes that are albums. And again, with sort of the lore and sort of the backstory that we're slowly constructing, it ties in directly with some of the things that led up to Black Kai Broadcast. And so, yeah, it's been fun to kind of dream up and put together. So, you know, it'll come out sort of one release at a time on different labels and different, because I didn't want to go to one label, one friend, and be like, hey, I have four albums.
Yeah.
Will you put them all out over the course of, you know, the next year or whatever? So,
yeah.
The one thing I do want to highlight is the most recent little batch of minifigures that we put together. I'm really proud of, because it was a collaboration actually with my daughters. So I have five girls, and they like parts of the band. Like, you know, they're not, it's not like they dive in and listen to it all the time. My oldest is really getting into, you know, heavier music and more experimental stuff, which of course fills my heart with joy. But, I don't know, probably sometime last year we were just talking about it, because they know we do the custom figures for the band, and I think it was just an opportunity to say, hey, would you like to learn about the creative process behind this? Like, what would you all think? Because they're always telling each other stories. They're, some of them are constantly like writing like little mini comics and drawing and all that sort of stuff. So I just thought this might be a really fun way to sort of dive into that creativity, but also show them the practical side of things. So the newest group of figures comes in a set of five, the East West wild cards. And that's one of the things that comes with a mystery download. But each one of those, one of the girls designed their own figure. So it's a figure that, you know, sort of represents each of them. And then we went to my buddies, Jeff and Jimmy, who run Dead Bird Toys. They're the ones that have helped us with each of the figures that we've done up to this point, and said, hey, how can we, you know, make this a reality? So, you know, commissioned them to help us sculpt and then cast them, and then got them made towards the end of last year, like right around Christmas time. So just super proud that we were able to pull something like that off. I mean, obviously as a dad, that's just a lot of fun. But I hope that it's something that they take with them in terms of whatever the creative process might be for them, whatever, you know, wherever life leads them, that, you know, if you can kind of envision something and spend the time needed to work on it and to flesh it out, that there are ways of making that sort of thing happen. And that's really important to me. So, yeah.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never thought-